Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, your station, your community.
Okay, listen to Vectis Radio on 104.6 FM and, of course, online. And for the next hour, we've got Ruth Waller with us to tell us all about the Dodna dig and various other things I'm sure she's got it online. So, Ruth, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to tell us a bit about the Dodna dig? I confess I don't know too much about it, except, of course, I have wandered by on the footpath there and seen all sorts of activity going on at the old cement works.
It is indeed the old cement works. It's next door to what is now Vestas Factory.
Right.
But underneath Vestas Factory, from about 1840, there was the Charles Francis and Sons cement factory called the West Medina Mills.
Okay.
And they made cement up until about 1939. And when the Vestas building was built, archaeologists did do an archaeological survey of what was there, but they left some standing Victorian cement kilns.
Right.
So with a charity called Gift to Nature on the island and a Heritage Lottery Fund grant, we've just finished 5 months of community archaeology excavations.
Wow.
Where local people who'd never done any archaeology before were trained how to do excavation, mm-hmm. and then carried out excavation on the
fantastic.
Surviving kilns.
And,
yeah.
And what sort of things have you been looking for, expecting to find, or indeed have found?
Well, we found things that we never expected. We obviously found cement kilns,
yeah.
but we've been able to identify that there were originally 6 bottle kilns, which are the earliest type of cement kilns on the site.
Mm.
Before we started, we thought there were only 3.
Okay.
And in addition, Charles Francis and Sons were at the forefront of Victorian technology, and in 1872 someone invented a thing called a chamber kiln, which improved the efficiency of making cement enormously.
Right.
And we found that on our site somewhere around 1872 Charles Francis and Sons built a chamber and slapped it onto 2 existing bottle kilns to make a chamber kiln, one that they were trying out, and they made cement in that. And then after they found that worked, they built a huge, big, enormous chamber kiln. So we've excavated the bottle kilns and both of the chamber kilns.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds brilliant.
It really was.
Yeah.
It really was.
Unexpected, as you say.
Unexpected, and all done by volunteers.
Brilliant.
By local people who'd never done any archaeology before.
So how long did production go on at that site then? Because I seem to remember as a child, a long time ago.
Oh, I hope you did play on the kilns.
Sorry?
I hope you played on the kilns.
We used to go fishing in the pond next door and play around
Chase's
on the
pond,
kilns.
Yeah.
Good old Chase's Pond, indeed. And so I do kind of remember always being there, really. I sort of got this vague memory of kind of ship stopping there, but perhaps that's
that was a little bit further along. Yeah, that was a little bit further along. A little bit further along. But if you walk now down the cycle track outside of Vestas, you'll be able to see the kilns. And if you look directly into the site, there are some arches.
Yeah.
And those arches only became clear when Groundsels, local island company, cleared the site ahead of the Heritage Lottery Fund bid.
Right.
And those arches are not, as one gentleman we overheard telling his son, that they were for parking the trains in overnight. They're not. The arches are simply to support the chamber, which was above the arches.
Right.
So what
sort of scale was this on? Because you see what's left, of course, but you know, were they huge structures?
Absolutely. We couldn't estimate the height of the bottle kilns because not enough of the structure had survived.
Mm.
But they were probably at least 12 feet, 13 feet high.
Wow.
The chamber kilns are even bigger. The inside diameter of one of the kiln pots on the chamber kiln was 13 feet.
Wow.
So the rest of it was even bigger. It's absolutely stunning.
And was this production just to kind of feed the island need, or was it exported to the mainland? Or
it was for both. So if you live in a concrete house or a house with cement or concrete that was built between 1840 and 1939, you will have some of the Charles Francis and Sons cement in your house on the island, anywhere on the island.
Brilliant.
So they're provided all of the island, and they were a world leader with a unique type of cement called Medina cement,
right,
made from stone and clay from the River Medina. And at the time, it was the hardest, fastest setting underwater cement that had ever been built. So Medina cement was exported all over England.
I always find that fascinating, actually, the fact that it sets underwater, because the Romans discovered that, is that right?
Yeah, the Romans had cement, and that's why in 1796, when the first hydraulic, that means it sets underwater, when that was invented, it was called Roman cement.
Oh, okay.
Because they were harking back to the Romans.
Ah, fascinating. Yeah.
But then that was replaced by Portland cement.
Right.
Portland cement was only called that because it looks like the same colour as the cliffs of Portland.
Oh, right. Okay, so there's no actual physical sort of connection at all. It's not using materials from there or anything like that. Ah, right, okay. And did you discover any kind of, sort of human-type artefacts there? Or?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. In one of the trenches, we had a whole load of discarded winching equipment, which would have been used by the people actually putting the raw materials into the kiln. The raw materials were heavy. They were clay, and they were clay and chalk. They needed to be lifted up high, so they used the winches. We also found three shovel blades, different sorts, that had been used by the Victorian workers. They were shoveling cement, and they'd broke, and they'd just thrown them, and they got filled in and covered in. And our volunteers loved that, because here they were digging away with spades and shovels, uncovering a shovel thrown away by a disgruntled Victorian workman.
Oh, that sounds brilliant. We'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. We need to go to some music now, and then we're having a little short break, and we'll be back with Ruth later on. Okay, well, welcome back to the Wednesday afternoon show. I've got Ruth Waller, archaeologist, with me this afternoon, or with us this afternoon, talking about some fascinating stuff that have been going on at Dodner, at the old cement works. And you were telling us a bit earlier about some of the kind of human artefacts, if you like, that you discovered. And anything else surprised you?
Yeah, we didn't find it. The Green Gym, who were an organisation which take volunteers out into the countryside to get exercise doing environmental work, they cleared the site for us so we could put down our trenches, and they found an old boot.
Right.
And one of our specialists looks at it. It dates to about the 1920s, but someone was wearing that boot on the site while cement was being made. It's got a massive hole in the sole, so it's obviously been thrown away.
Yeah,
but that was a real connection between the people who were working on the site.
I was going to say.
And us, you know, we were all also wearing boots. Mine had holes in the same place.
Yeah, that is the fascinating thing about archaeology, isn't it? It's that contact with the past, real tangible contact with the past.
It is. That's why I went into archaeology in the first place. When I was 9 years old, my dad made me and my twin sister dig his potato patch, and I found a little Roman coin.
Dad
took me and the Roman coin to the local museum, and they identified it as a Roman coin. And I was 9 years old, and I was astonished that the Romans had not only been in my back garden, but I could touch their coin, you know, with my skin, and imagine the people in Roman times doing the same thing.
It is fascinating. Yeah,
it really brought it to life.
You were saying earlier that this dig was in conjunction with Gift to Nature.
Yes, it was Gift to Nature. They're an environmental charity. They're part of the Island 2000 Trust, and they wrote the Heritage Lottery Fund bid. So there wasn't just work on the excavations at the cement kilns. There was also work done in the Dodner Creek Nature Reserve.
Oh, okay.
Because Gift to Nature now manage all of the Isle of Wight Council's nature reserves. And they put together this Heritage Lottery Fund bid. So if anyone's wandering down the cycle path, just after the cement kilns, have a read. There's lots of information on the information boards. Mm. Just after the bioreceptive sculpture.
A what?
A bioreceptive sculpture.
Which is?
Which is a bench seat designed by Eccleston George, the art group. And it's designed to be receptive to insects. So you can sit down on it, you can park your bike in it, and rare insects are living in it.
Okay.
But at the same time, there's a millstone representing the mills at West Medina Mills, made out of concrete. representing the cement, and the seats are moulded from the tips of blades that Vestas, because Vestas also put a lot of money into the project.
Oh, okay.
So take a walk down into Dixon's Copse. It's absolutely fantastic. It's one of the best nature reserves on the island.
Ah, right. Is the Dognell site open to the public, or...?
The cement kiln site isn't at the moment. We are working with Gift to Nature and the Isle of Wight Council, who own the land, to see what we can do in the future.
Oh, OK. And tell me a bit about yourself. How did you sort of fall into this fascinating profession?
Well, when I was nine, I thought, oh, I wish I could be an archaeologist, but I didn't know that you could be an archaeologist. So I went to university to study history, and then when I got to university, I realised you could study archaeology. So I changed after 2 weeks from a history degree to doing an archaeology degree. Right. Did my degree, age of 21. I then worked as a digger, an archaeological digger, all round Britain. And I came to the island in 2001 to work with the Isle of Wight Council's Archaeology Service. Unfortunately, due to local government cuts, I got made redundant in 2013.
Local government cuts again.
Yeah. So I set up my own company, Past Wight, and I now work as an independent archaeologist all over the island.
Oh, okay.
And I'd been involved with the West Medina Cement Mills when Vesta's factory was built. Mm. So I worked with Gift to Nature to help bring the excavations into the Heritage Lottery.
Oh, okay. And have you got a favourite historical period that you particularly...
I have indeed. I have two. I have the Iron Age, which is the prehistoric period just before the Romans came, and also the Saxon period, which is the period, the 4th, the 5th, the 6th and the 7th centuries after the Romans went.
Ah, fantastic.
And I like them because the Romans are boring. The Romans,
you really think so?
Yeah, the Romans have left lots of archaeological evidence around. It's easy to work out what the Romans are doing. But the Iron Age and the Anglo-Saxon people, there's a lot less around.
Oh, I
so
see.
It's harder to find.
Right.
And I like the challenge.
Oh, no, I can identify with that. Yeah, it just threw at me from then, because I always found the Romans quite fascinating, really.
They gave us so much, didn't they? Yeah,
they're too much.
Yeah.
And you've got some other digs going on the island at the moment.
I have.
Right?
I've got quite a few projects, but one I can talk about is the Unlocking Your Vaults, which is a Heritage Lottery funded project from the Braiding Community Archive Group.
Right.
The Braiding Community Archive Group was set up in 2014 when Braiding's local historian, Molly Pusey, died. And she bequeathed her collection of historical things to Cathy Mills, who was then the Braiding Town Clerk. And Cathy put together a group of 12 volunteers who want to ensure that Braiding's heritage is kept alive and well, and want there to be somewhere where everybody can share Braiding's heritage.
Okay.
So we were successful in getting a Heritage Lottery Fund bid to create a Braiding Community Archive website. And what we're doing at the moment is we're working in the old town hall in Braiding, looking through the hundreds of years worth of documents relating to Braiding Town.
Ah, I see.
And yesterday, what day of the week is it today? Wednesday. Monday, I was reading a book that was written in 1628.
Right.
And so what we're doing is we're cleaning them, we're scanning them, and then we're going to put that information on the website.
Of course, archaeology is not just about digging holes, is it, really?
Absolutely. It's about anything to do with the past, although I quite like digging holes.
Well, have you got any holes planned then?
I have some holes planned. I can't talk about them, though, because of client confidentiality.
Okay, no, that's absolutely fine, yeah. So with the Braiding project, that's presumably going to be open for people to look at some point?
Yes, indeed. It's actually, if anyone wants to come along and help us, they can get in touch with me. I've got a website called pastwhite.co.uk.
Okay.
Look on the website, contact me, and you can come along and join us and have a look through everything.
Okay, so you're looking for volunteers.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
that'd be fantastic, yeah. Brilliant. Come and help us actually holding and reading the history of Braiding firsthand.
It can be quite tricky to decipher, I expect, at the time.
Very difficult to decipher. Luckily, we've got one lady on our steering group, Sarah, who's a very experienced family historian, and she can read this early 18th century writing, which is perplexing the rest of us.
Yeah, yeah, all the F's or S's and stuff.
Absolutely,
like that.
Absolutely, yeah, we're learning.
That's absolutely brilliant. Okay, welcome back. You're listening to Vectus Radio on 104.6 FM and, of course, online if you've got one of these newfangled computer-type things. And this afternoon we're talking with Ruth Swaller, ace archaeologist, about all sorts of things that she's up to on the island at the present. Now, I've got to ask this, because the other thing about archaeology is you dig all these holes and then you fill them in again.
Yeah. It's called backfilling.
Backfilling.
Backfilling. When we did the cement kiln excavations, we had about 35 volunteers who spent an enormous, about 4 months in really hot weather, excavating out these great big enormous holes. One of them was at least 2 metres deep inside one of the kiln pots. At the end of the excavation, I had to turn around and say to them, sorry chaps, we have to put it all back.
Oh, no.
Because an archaeologist has to backfill. Because, as is the case on this site, the cement kilns are going to be left there forever, hopefully. So we had to backfill, put everything back to protect the sensitive structures. On that site, the wind has eroded away some of the concrete structures even.
Right.
And we had to put the soil back to protect the structures.
Okay, so in future years, if anybody wants to do any more investigation, they've got to basically redo all that you've done.
They have, but we've been very, very kind. We've left blue tarpaulins on the bottom of each trench. We excavated 13 trenches, and before we put all the soil back, we lined them with blue tarpaulins so that it'll be immediately obvious as where we stopped when they go back.
And presumably, obviously, there's sort of documentation and photographs and stuff like that for people to refer to.
I'm having to write the excavation report for the Heritage Lottery Fund, and archaeologists have to record everything to the nearest millimetre. So in three dimensions, national grid and height above sea level, we have to do a drawn, a written and a photographic record. So as we excavate, we're destroying what's down there, but we're replacing that with all the paper records. So the paper records will be deposited with the Isle of Wight Council's Archaeology Service, because they hold an historic environment record, HER database, that's the database of all known archaeological sites on the island.
Okay.
So it'll be there for generations and generations of people.
I'm going to ask you an impossible question now. And when people ask me questions like this, I hate them, but I'm going to ask anyway. What's your most exciting dig you've ever done?
Now that is an interesting question, because I've been excavating for 33 years.
That's a long time. That's a lot of holes.
It is. A lot of holes. I think it would have to be the Black Death Plague Pit that I excavated in London on the site of the old medieval Royal Mint.
See, you're in my territory now, because I love morbid stuff. I love the old folk murder ballads and stuff like that, so carry on, tell me all.
Well, it was when the Black Death hit in the 13th and 14th centuries, particularly in the 14th century, places like London ran out of spaces to bury people in their churchyards, and also because they wanted to get rid of all the bodies quickly so no one would catch the plague, they excavated huge plague pits, and one of these just happened to be sited where the old Royal Mint was later built. So while the London Docklands Light Railway was being excavated in the 1980s, a team of archaeologists, including me, from the Museum of London, we went down and we excavated them. And the bodies were simply thrown into the pit, wrapped in a shroud. So you had to try and excavate from the top down, working out which body parts went with which body. And it was the first time I had actually put my hands inside a human being's skull and touched the inside of their skull.
Wow.
And it was a really quite a moving thing, because here was someone who died in medieval times from the plague, and here's me touching the inside of their skull, something they wouldn't have been able to do. It really was, it brought you close in your imagination to those people.
That's fascinating, isn't it? Yeah.
Indeed.
I suppose that must have affected the island as well, or were we a bit kind of isolated from it because of the solent?
Not isolated enormously, because the plague did happen on the island, not with the same virulence as places like London or Southampton and Portsmouth.
Right. Okay. Completely different question. I've got to ask you this as well. You've got a tattoo.
I have a tattoo.
Tell us about your tattoo.
My tattoo is not in a secret place. My tattoo is on
otherwise
the inside.
I wouldn't have seen it, would I?
Otherwise, you would not have seen it. You definitely would not have seen it. It's on the inside of my wrist, and it is a Pictish boar. And when I was 19, I was at university studying archaeology. I went on my first excavation to Scotland, and I excavated a small piece of a bone that had been used by someone to practice carving Pictish symbols. And this Pictish boar was on that piece of bone. I absolutely loved it. And because I was an archaeology student, I got to draw it, so I drew it. I kept the drawing around on me until I was 50. And when I was 50, as a 50th birthday present, I had it tattooed on my wrist. And the reason I kept it and the reason I have it tattooed is because the Pictish boar represents when life is really getting at you and things are really, really bad, you turn round and you fight. And so I had my Pictish ball so that I can now, if anything bad happens, I just turn around and fight.
That's fascinating. Yeah, it's amazing, really. Archaeology just puts in touch so in such a tangible way with the past, doesn't it? Really,
it does. You're actually touching with your skin. Yours is the first human skin to touch an object that you find in the ground since whoever dropped it. So, a Roman coin. You're the first person to touch it since the Romans.
Yeah.
It's even more exciting if you're touching a Neolithic flint axe. Maybe 4,000 years old. It's
fantastic.
Just really does put you, in your imagination, in touch with the people who lived their lives so many thousands of years ago.
Brilliant. Well, I know I've got to raise it against good old time team. You know, I bet you get asked this all the time, but you know, do you think it was a good thing for archaeology, or do you think it had its downsides? I know I was an avid viewer, but I know I've spoken to some people who thought it was perhaps not as
Yeah, I was also an avid viewer. I watched every single episode, including the episode where they came to the island in 2001, which I was actually in.
Oh, brilliant.
Yes, I was
in. I'm going to have to find it again now.
What we did at the County Archaeology Service, we organised a big community field walking. So whilst the time team were excavating down the bottom of a particular hillside, 200 local people were walking the field, and they found some Iron Age coins. And because they found the Iron Age coins, the time team excavated two trenches up the top of the hill and found the body of an Iron Age man and what could have been an Iron Age hill fort. But unfortunately, because the time team have a script, they didn't mention any of that. They just talked about the Romans.
So are there any plans for that to be investigated any further?
Would absolutely love to get a big community archaeology excavation together and excavate that site. If we have any listeners who are multi-millionaires, please,
you never know.
Yeah, please, can you give us some funding to get the local people from the island together to excavate their own heritage?
Yeah, and of course the landscape at Brading changed dramatically over that period, hasn't it? Because wouldn't the sea a lot closer to the villa?
Yes, indeed. Brading marshes, as they are now, were completely covered by the sea. And gradually, from the medieval periods onwards, people have gradually built earthworks to gradually reclaim a lot of it. So it's now much further out.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable, really. Yeah.
I can believe it.
Well, you're the expert.
Not really.
Oh, dear. Okay. Have you got a dream project? Is that something you would really, really love to do?
Yeah, my dream project is to set up a community archaeology centre on the Isle of Wight so that I can teach the local community. And my dream project is actually re-excavating the time team field.
Oh, really?
It really is. That's my dream project, to really find out what's there, not the tiny proportion that the time team did.
Yeah, you think they missed a bit.
I think they missed a very large bit, and I'm a passionate advocate of heritage belongs to the local community, and I'm very passionate, which is why I'm doing both of these community projects. I'm absolutely passionate in allowing people, especially young people, to be involved in the investigation of their own heritage.
That sounds fantastic project, actually. Well, let's hope you can fulfil your dream.
Yeah.
I always find it fascinating that that archaeologists can tell so much from so little, really. I know you must draw on a vast wealth of knowledge from from previous excavations and so on. But you know, you see somebody pick up a little tiny piece of pottery, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a whole town there.
Yeah, we our training never stops. So you go to university for 3 years, you learn, and then constantly whilst you're working, you're learning new things. Mm. You can only recognise something if you've seen it before, or if you know somebody else who's seen it before, or if you can see it in a book. So as well as just working the 9 to 5, archaeologists go home and learn all the time.
Ah, that's brilliant. Yeah. Well, it's been really fascinating, Ruth. Thanks so much for coming in. I've enjoyed it immensely, and let's hope you get to fulfil your dream.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next week, we have an interview with DJ Tony Christian, who was on Radio Caroline many years ago. So I'm going to find that really interesting, because I was an avid listener. So we'll look forward to that. Okay, so you've been listening to the Wednesday afternoon show, and with Laura, who's not actually in the studio at the moment. She's outside of the window waving at me, doing things with Charlie, and there's also some other people out there, and we're going to be handing over to the next show very shortly. So thanks very much for listening, and hopefully you'll tune in again next week, and it's great to be with you. Oh, we'd missed out on our Educating Archie trivia this week, so we'll bring that in next week. But there was one little thing that I just had to say, and I want you all to try this at home. And it said that it's impossible to lick your own elbow, so I'll just leave you with that, and I hope you give it a go, and we'll hope to be with you again next week.
Vectis Radio FM 104.6, your station, your community.